Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Good morning, everybody. We are here to do our Christmas show.
Yes, it is.
It's not Christmas for us yet. We're recording this
early
so that we can all run away with our families and have a good time.
And we hope you are too.
Absolutely.
But if you're listening, then we did want to have some new information
and
for you.
If you're listening, you should be asking yourself, why are you still sitting here listening to
well,
us?
Well, maybe they're driving somewhere and they're just putting us on because we're a fun show, Jerry.
Oh, is that what it is?
Okay. Yes.
I thought they were just bored and had nothing better to do.
No, informative and fun.
Okay, I'll tell you.
So
what.
Let's make it like that, right?
All right. I'll be informative, you be fun. How about that?
All right, let's do it. Okay. I can jingle and jangle and dance.
That's right, you can. Although since they put us in this new set,
yes,
we really can't dance as well.
No,
there's no room to dance with this big oblong table, damn it.
Yes, and it's hard to stand up and sit down in the same video move.
That's true. They had to move the cameras.
Shoot, yeah.
Oh, well. Let's do what we can do. We're going to talk a little bit about senescent cells today.
Yeah.
Isn't that a joyous Christmas topic?
Well, yes, it is. And the reason is, you didn't explain it. The reason it is because there is more we can do to help when people used to think there was nothing to do. So there's hope. This is a season of hope.
Okay.
And it is a season of
and
thinking.
Renewal.
Renewal, regeneration, hope, and also the season where you want to focus in on gifting. And so the question, big question is, what is your gift to yourself and what is more important than health? You sometimes don't think about health until you lose good health,
mm-hmm,
and then you wish that you could have done something to change that. You know, it's like normal aging is like a freight train coming down the road. If you knew you could take some steps to avoid it hitting you, wouldn't you want to do that?
Sure.
And to me, that's what this is. It's the freight train is coming because we've lived that long. And things are happening because that's normal aging. But the question is, are you ready to step out of the way or are you going to let it just tumble over you and roll you down?
Okay. Well, I tend to be proactive in my life. So
you're going to run away.
I'd be
away.
More likely to put some dynamite under the tracks and blow the train the hell out of the way.
Are you stepping aside and let it go by?
Okay, well, that's,
let's not blow things up.
I'm reverting to my youth. What can I say?
That's
I was
right.
Pretty good with explosives once upon a time.
Well, we don't advocate those here on this show, Jerry.
That's right. Okay, so this is Leading Edge Medicine. Please do not blow anything up. And
right.
If you do, don't claim that we gave you the idea.
It's a medical show.
It's a medical show. That's right. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about senile cells.
Yeah.
Now, you know, when I was a lad,
mm-hmm,
we did not learn really in my residency about Alzheimer's disease per se.
Mm-hmm.
We learned about senile dementia.
Sure. Yes.
That's what we used to call
the
it.
The word came later.
Senile dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got a specific diagnosis. So
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
all dementias, whether it was prefrontal dementia, lacunar dementia, whether mm-hmm it was, you know, vascular dementias or Alzheimer's, we just called it senile dementia because
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
it was something old folks got.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
we now know that every cell in your body has the potential to get senile, which is a relatively new concept, really. Mm. You know, we used to think of people's brains going senile, or they would get weak, or they get tired, and, you know, they kind of dwindled away from old age. But we now understand that process a whole lot better. Mm. And every cell in our body is designed to function for a certain period of time and do its job.
Right.
Skin cells are your interface with the world. Mm-hmm. Your neurons are there to send signals back and forth and allow you to think and react and move. Your gut is there to absorb nutrients and so on. But every cell type in your body has the capacity to reach the end of its lifespan.
Yeah.
And in a ideal setting, it dies, gets replaced with a brand new cell that continues the process.
Yes.
But what we've all noticed is every generation of cells is not quite as good as the one before.
Sure.
Yeah.
It is, yes. And
yeah. I mean, we've all been replacing skin cells, me for 77 years, you for something over 30.
Sure. I'll take it.
Never allude to a lady's actual age. So something over 30 years.
Yeah, my face says differently, but that's okay.
And so the quality of our skin cells is going down. And it doesn't look as good as it did. Well, I mean, I think we look fabulous, baby. But, you know, objectively, yeah, it's not turning over quite as smooth and baby-like as it did a while back.
I mean, and it takes longer. And then, you know, there are other changes that are taking place which will add to and compound what is happening to you.
And the cells in our bones wear out, get replaced. Mm-hmm. But as they're getting replaced, they're not being replaced with as good a cell. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with our lung, our heart, our kidneys, our liver, our brains, our eyes. Every cell type in our body is kind of degrading as the generations pass.
Right.
And we used to think of that as a unavoidable, just a consequence of getting old.
Right.
We now know that some cells in our tissues, in every tissue in our bodies, become senescent, become senile, long before other cells. Mm-hmm. And these senescent cells, these senile cells refuse to do their job anymore. And in fact, they start producing pro-inflammatory, anti-growth, anti-healing, anti-repair chemicals into their environment. And in that environment is other healthier cells.
Right.
And so when we form senescent cells, they're actually inhibiting the growth and healing and repair of healthy cells.
That's right.
And just like the zombies in the movie, they go about recruiting new zombies, you know, by biting people and so on. These senescent cells are sending out chemicals that recruit other senescent cells.
Right.
They actually, by inhibiting your healthy cells from growing and repairing and being replaced, turn them into senescent cells.
Right.
So it's a cascade.
Correct. So they're accelerating the impact of aging as they're accumulating and sitting around, and they're not letting the normal cells perform normal function.
Right. And so when we're young, we still produce these cells. Okay. We don't produce as many of them.
Yes.
But we do produce them. And our immune system looks at these cells and says, these are not normal. We're not going to let them. And your immune system clears these cells quickly when you're young. But as we age, two bad things happen. We start forming more and more senescent cells. We form them quicker, and we don't clear them as quickly.
Right.
And the consequence of that is by the time you're in your 50s and 60s, you may have 30, 40, 50 times as many senescent cells in your body as you had when you were 15 or 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of why you're feeling old.
Yeah.
That's why your joints are getting stiff, is there are senescent cells in those joints preventing them from recovering and healing and repairing. That's part of why your muscles get sore more easily and they're getting weaker, because the senescent cells are poisoning the function of your muscles.
Mm.
your kidneys are not working as well. Your heart does not pump blood as efficiently. Your lungs don't exchange oxygen and carbon dioxide as well. And your brain doesn't work as well.
Yeah.
We start developing age-related cognitive decline. That is, our thinking slows down and becomes less efficient. Mm. And one of the major drivers of all of these changes is the accumulation of senescent cells in our system.
Right. And I haven't heard you say yet that it's abnormal. It's all considered normal.
It's perfectly normal, right? Because it happens to everybody.
Exactly.
And so that by definition makes it normal. It also stinks.
Yes.
It's not fun. It's not good for us. It's not healthy. It's just normal.
Yeah.
The really neat news is that about 3 or 4 years ago, I stumbled across some papers on senescent cell therapies.
Okay.
And we basically, shall we say, borrowed?
Borrowed right,
from the Mayo Clinic, one of their research protocols, and started treating senescent cells in a few of our patients way back when.
Correct.
People who had very obvious issues. And it turned out when we treated their senescent cells, they got better.
Yeah.
Now, they didn't turn into 15-year-olds, but a lot of their problems improved. The men were urinating better. They had more energy. They had less aches and pains. They were feeling smarter. And so we've, over the last several years, started treating more and more of our patients. And at this point, we're at the point where we're saying, you know, this is probably something we should start doing for almost everybody pretty early in the program.
Right.
You know, we start off with the hormone balancing and the testosterone and estrogen, progesterone, et cetera. Mm. We try to decrease the inflammation. But I'm starting to think that senescent cell therapy should be something we move up into early stages of the program.
Yeah. No, you're right about that, because there's more that is published about it now. We know more about it, and we have a track record of having experienced that through our patients. And then, you know, there's published data to support it.
Yeah.
The only drawback, I think, Jerry, is that there's no lab to measure the impact of what we're doing.
Well, there is, but it's not convenient.
It's not clinically available for patient use in clinical practices easily.
You said the magic word, easily. It involves biopsies.
Yeah.
We have to cut a little piece of you off and send it to the lab.
I don't think many people want to do that.
Right. So, you know, if I take part of your skin, or I take a piece of your muscle, or I took a piece of your heart, or I took a piece of your brain, I can send it to the lab and they can measure senescent cells there and tell me, you know, here's how many they have now. Now we'll treat them, we bring them back, and we can take a little piece of them again and send it and compare.
Yeah.
So we can do it. I just don't know many people who really want us whittling little hunks of them off several times a year and sending it to the lab.
No, the best way would be if there was a blood test that could measure the impact, and we don't have that yet.
No. And I promise you there are a lot of research people looking for blood tests that would be useful for this. But at the moment, we are stuck going by clinical philosophy, by how you feel.
That's right. Okay. I do actually, even if so it's subjective, I do tell my patients to kind of measure walking speed, do a pain scale, and do things like that that'll then tell us. We do grip strength in the office so that we get a better idea. So there are some, but they're still subjective more. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and I certainly agree, because I get my senescent cells treated on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. You know, Dr. Mixon wants to be as strong, fast, lean, smart, and sexy as humanly possible, as long as possible. Although my 12-year-old daughter tells me that she can see that I'm getting old.
Oh, dear.
But, you know, when you're 12 years old, everybody over 20 looks old.
For sure. But you beat the odds, Jerry. In your genetic tree, in your family history, you have beat the odds.
Well, we're fortunate in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Yeah. I always tell my wife, you know, count our blessings, because the Lord obviously loves us. He's been really kind.
And if we just think a little harder, we all have something to be thankful for. So I think this is the time to kind of focus on that. And then as you plan for the future, think about what you can and cannot do. And our purpose here is to tell you that there is more science and there's information and there are things we can do. Yeah.
I think we need another segment to talk about senescent cells, though.
Okay.
Because we're up on our 15-minute break.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back. We're going to tell you a little more about how we treat senescent cells, the reasons for treating senescent cells, and some of the cutting-edge things that are just coming down the pike on senescence.
I like it.
That's right. Well, and that is the wonderful thing, is that there are now studies being done on people with early dementia. In fact, one study in early Alzheimer's disease that is using lower doses of the senescent cell therapy than we had been using, but using it for a much longer period of time.
I see.
Okay. When we have been treating senescent cells originally, we used the Mayo Clinic protocol that meant we treated the people 3 days a week for 3 weeks, and that lowered senescent cell load in their body about 70%. So we could knock it down by about 70% in 3 days per week for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
There's a recent study looking at people with early Alzheimer's disease, and they're giving them 2 days a week.
Okay.
Every other week.
Okay.
For nearly 6 months.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then measuring the phosphorylated tau, which is a product of brain damage that is excreted into your spinal canal. Mm. And then they did spinal taps on these people and actually were measuring how much phosphorylated tau was being produced. And it turned out that senescent therapy at that low level, but for a long period of time, decreased the amount of damage being done to their brains and slowed the progression of the Alzheimer's.
Mm.
Now, we have a patient who was diagnosed with Alzheimer's several years ago.
That's right.
And we have treated her with senescent cell therapy, and she's been on the Bredesen protocol.
Mm.
And when she went to the UW for possible inclusion in one of their research protocols, they wouldn't accept her because she's doing too good.
Right. Now, she still has dementia.
Of course. She hasn't fixed it.
That's right.
But she didn't continue getting worse.
Worse, right. Yeah.
And Alzheimer's is supposed to be a disease that gets worse and worse and worse. You know. So the question in our mind is, you know, if we were to use the senescent cell therapy for a year or two, could we even get some improvement with her dementia?
Mm.
That would be really fascinating to know.
So right now, all we can say is that the progression of disease has stopped or slowed down.
Yes.
And that's all we can claim.
But you know what? That's pretty impressive with Alzheimer's.
It is, sure. Yes.
I'm quite happy with that.
Yes, absolutely.
So I wish I had a cure, but if I can slow it down, I'll settle for that right now.
Yeah, you know, there's so many people are working on a cure. Unfortunately, as everybody knows, there is really no cure.
Not now.
Yeah.
Maybe someday.
Maybe someday.
And maybe this will be part of it.
Yes, who knows?
We hope.
Yeah.
But I have been treated with senescent cell therapy repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because in the research animals, let's say the mice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, research mice live about 25 months on average.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they treated 20-month-old mice, which is about the equivalent of a 70-year-old man, 65, 70-year-old man, they treated them one time, and they extended their lifespan by 36 months.
Right.
Or I'm sorry, 36%.
Percent, yeah.
So, yeah, so they lived 33 months
mm-hmm.
instead of 25. Well, that was important.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we humans need to have our senescent cells approached multiple times in a lifespan because we have much longer lifespans.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we treat us once in a few months, we're developing new senescent cells. We need to be treated again. Mm. But we have the capacity now to give people low-dose therapies for longer periods of time. The only real downside I've seen so far is that some people don't tolerate the medication. Yeah, some people get nauseated or get headaches.
Fatigue.
Yeah. So if you tolerate the senescent cell medications, my current feeling is you should be treated probably for life.
Well, and also there's a point here you made earlier that if the dose is lowered, maybe the side effect profile will be less.
Yes. Yeah, well, and these drugs are potent drugs.
Yeah.
They kill senescent cells. They're originally designed to treat people with a chronic myelogenous leukemia. And those people take 100 milligrams a day, every day of their life for years. And so when you're taking a drug every day for years, you can expect a significant number of people are going to have adverse effects. When you only take it for 3 days, the odds on getting serious side effects are much lower. Nevertheless, some people are sensitive.
Yes.
So, you know, there's an upside and a downside to everything we do.
Right.
But if we are effective at treating senescent cells, and if we can get anywhere near that 36% increased lifespan, do you realize what that would be for human beings? I mean, instead of 80 years, you add 36% on top of 80 years.
Yeah.
That's pretty dramatic. You're adding about 25 years to people's life.
Sure, sure. But you know, Jerry, we've also said in the past that there are curves where if you're healthy at age 75, then your life expectancy isn't 77 or 78 anymore. It's right. more than that.
Yes.
And so there's a component over here, and people who are listening will ask about that. Why live longer? Live longer if you have good quality of life. You don't want to live longer if you're sick and in a nursing home.
I don't want to be that 105-year-old guy in the nursing home that is getting my diaper changed and, you know, fed mush three times a day. No. I want to be the guy who topples over on the ski slopes. And some people say, wow, isn't that great? He got to go skiing his last day on Earth. And other people will say, what the hell was that 110-year-old fool doing on skis anyway? But I don't care. I don't live my life to be approved of by everybody else. I live it to enjoy.
Again, the point is very important is what do you want your quality of life to be? And as you're getting older, we know that it is going to be poor because there are things that are happening to you physiologically that don't allow you to be as robust as when you were younger. The question is, how much are you willing to do for yourself right now?
Yeah.
Because this is a program that does require your full participation. Yes, we've talked about therapies, but it doesn't mean that you can take a pill and reverse everything about aging.
No. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, that's what everybody asks for. Where's my pill?
That's right.
Yeah.
We'll give them some pills.
Yeah. We do give them tons.
But they don't reverse aging, you know. We can't make anyone younger. Yeah. That's the important thing. The folks make the mistake of calling us an anti-aging clinic. No, we're a longevity clinic.
Yeah.
Our goal is to give you a long, joyous, fulfilling life.
Yeah.
Not necessarily to try to make you younger. Making you younger involves warping space and time. And we're pretty good, but we're not that good.
Maybe one day, Jerry. Who knows?
Someday. It's going to take the physicists to get involved instead of the physicians, though.
Yeah.
So.
No, in the meantime, these are new protocols. And again, as you had mentioned in the last segment, Mayo Clinic published them. We borrowed them. And we have been seeing changes in our patients. I wish we did have a blood test. We could measure before and then do a treatment and then after to see, you know, quantify how much improvement
and
there is.
And to check you every couple of months to say, all right, this person now needs another therapy.
Right.
To some extent, we're treating half blind. We're going by how the people feel and function.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I can usually tell when I need another treatment because I start having more pain.
Okay.
I mean, I used my body heavily when I was a young, foolish guy, you know, and so I've been shot, stabbed, blown up. You know, I got bullet holes and joints hither and yon and big ugly scars scattered around my body. And when I start hurting too much, I know it's time to do the senescent cell, because the senescent cell therapy allows me to heal and repair better.
Yes.
And I have less discomfort.
Right.
I can run and jump and feel better.
Yeah.
If I start having trouble getting up and down from a chair and my hips and lower back are giving me grief, time for a senescent cell therapy.
Yeah. And I tell my patients similar things. I tell them to definitely watch for what is better and then make a mental note of it. And then when those symptoms start to recur, whatever they may be, because they're different, somebody's thinking sharper, somebody in your case is pain. I have had patients tell me their walking speed improves, their exercise capacity is better, they can lift heavier and better. And so I tell them, when those old symptoms start to return or there is something new, then it's time.
Yeah.
It could be 2 months, it could be 3 months. I wish we had more guidelines, but the studies just are not there right now.
Well, you know, I've got a gizmo in my office. It's a device that my company president told me he wanted me to buy. And so it measures how much weight I lift, push, or pull.
Okay.
And so if I've got 50 pounds in each hand and I lift 50 pounds in each hand, that's 100 pounds.
Yeah.
If I lift it 10 times, that's 1,000 pounds.
Yeah.
All right. In a course of a normal average work day, I sit at my desk, I read papers. When I get fuzzy headed and need a lift, I step over 10 feet, I pick up the weights, I start doing some exercise, and I'll exercise enough to get my breathing fast and my muscles, you know, quivering a bit, and then I can sit down and study again.
Right.
In an average day, I will move 12 to 20,000 pounds.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
Which
impressive.
Is pretty good physical activity for a man in his late 70s. But when I can only do 8 or 10,000 pounds in a day, I go get my senescent cell therapy. I double check my testosterone and dehydroepiandrosterone. I check my inflammatory markers. If any of them are awry, I treat that. In the week or two after I've had senescent cell therapy, I can push that up to over 30,000 pounds.
Wow.
My peak has been 35,200 pounds in the course of one workday. But I can't do that when I'm getting achy and sore and in need of therapy again.
Sure.
So, you know, for me, I've got an objective marker. It's not a laboratory test.
Yeah.
It's how much I can push, pull, lift.
Right. Right.
In the course of a normal day.
Right. Yeah. And it's a very good marker. And so we tell our, not everybody has that device at home, but that's what we tell them. As you were talking though, I was thinking, you know, even our young people that sit at computers all day long and they mention that they don't have time to work out, even if they had some things like this in their rooms, they could just get up for a few minutes and then be a little bit more active. It would just change the paradigm for them.
Mine is 10 feet from my desk.
Yeah.
You know, and yes, if I'm sitting, I can only read dense medical literature for 30 to 40 minutes.
Right.
And then my things start to get fuzzy and I'm not really learning.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to get up. I take a few steps over to the right. I grab my device. And in 2 or 3 minutes, I've lifted a few thousand pounds.
Yeah.
And I get back and I can sit down and focus again.
You've improved the blood flow.
Yes. I'm breathing fast. My blood pressure's going, you know. I wish everybody could do something like that.
Something,
and it doesn't have to be that.
No, it doesn't have to be that. Some people have a walking treadmill, or they have some weights, just free weights sitting in their room, and they could just lift them up. I've even seen some people put a little trampoline in their office and jump up and down a few times. But whatever modality, the point being that you don't have to carve out 1 hour of your work day to go get that exercise in. You can do little segments throughout the day that will improve not just your productivity at work, but it'll help your body heal, repair, and energize you and do what it's supposed to do for you and not let you age as quickly.
Before Lynn got me my machine, I did sit-ups and push-ups.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And, you know, yes, in the course of a day, I could knock out 250, 300 push-ups, you know, and that would be, I use that instead of the device.
Yeah.
So
Right.
It doesn't matter what you do, but you should do something.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. That's an important message for the holidays as we all struggle with time management, that you can all do something. It doesn't have to be hours, but it can be a little amount of dedicated time. And also another thing is you enjoy what you do. And so make it fun. I have had people tell me they don't like to exercise. Well, then don't exercise. Put the music on and dance.
Yep.
You know, do whatever gives you joy. That's more important because then you'll do it. Otherwise, you won't do it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I think we've gotten to the end of that. So let's not push senescence beyond. Everybody,
good.
I hope you're all getting
ready.
A great Christmas vacation. Enjoy yourself. I know Samara and Sunil are going to take off and do some fun stuff.
Yeah,
and I'm grabbing Bandine and Ivory, and we're heading for the Caribbean. So, so I will come back sunburned, rested, and ready to go here in about 2 weeks. So.
Sounds great, Jerry. Happy holidays.
Thank you for listening, folks.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose.
No.
Except for the occasional forest birds.
That's right.
Yuletide carols being sung by choir.
Oh, the sounds of Christmas. I love this.
Right.
Welcome back, Leading Edge Medicine.
I've been known to put on Christmas music in August. You know.
Have you really?
To get ready for it.
I just like the music.
Is that because you were in Iceland in August last year, maybe? That's why. I don't know. I'm Lynette.
That was July.
Yes, that's probably why, all the snow and ice. Dr. Umat here and Dr. Mixon here. We've been talking about Keytruda with Paul from Tacoma. We'll continue that.
Okay.
There we go.
Hi.
Hello, Paul.
Hello.
So anyway, that's what we think is going on. What else do you need?
Well, concerning the RSV shot, is it okay if I get that?
Should be, yeah.
And the pneumonia shot? I haven't had both.
You know?
I don't know.
Just check. We the question is, are any of these live viruses? Because the Keytruda will suppress your immune response so that if you were to get a live virus, you might actually get a form of the disease. So, yeah. So let her do a little typing here. I don't think either of those are live viruses, though, but we'll have to wait and see.
She's typing quickly.
Okay. That's right.
I doubt about that. Well, it's important. RSV shot.
You're right. Inactivated vaccines, including pneumococcal and meningococcal vaccines, are recommended for specific patients.
Yeah. Okay. So apparently they're all right.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yep.
You talked about the nature of my cancer.
Yeah.
How do I go about finding the exact nature of it? I don't quite understand.
To really get the exact nature, you need a piece of the tumor. And so, you know, at some point, your physicians need to have done a biopsy and just pinched off a little piece of the cancer and then not fixed it in formalin. Because the formalin will denature the protein and destroy the DNA. So what they have to do is they do a frozen section or something like that where it's preserved. They use a different preservative from formalin, ship it off to the pathologist who has it sliced, and they take little pieces of it and run the genome and do a full genome study on the cancer. And then they look at markers. There are particular markers that correlate with different degrees of aggressiveness of the cancers. And so that's really what you need is a genomic study on the cancer. It gives them a lot of guidance about what will and won't work on this particular tumor. I think that these days everybody would be doing it.
Keytruda is an appropriate thing. That's after they did some kind of DNA test. I tried reading it, and it means absolutely nothing to me.
Yeah, but that's probably what happened. Then they did the DNA study on the tumor, and they said, okay, this falls within the parameters that Keytruda's got a good chance of working. So,
well, and it has. It's
good.
Below 0.04 as far as the testosterone
is. Yeah, and you mean is the PSA?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes,
PSA.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, and that's all good news. You know, it says that you're on a good drug combination and you've got this thing suppressed, and with luck, it'll actually shrink instead of grow. Mm-hmm. We hope.
Well, I sure thank you.
You're welcome, sir. You take care.
Right, thank you so much for your call, Paul. We're headed to Kent now to talk to Ken. Ken from Kent. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Hey, Ken. Are you married to Barbie?
I'm having a ball. I gotta tell you.
Oh boy, you opened a can of worms, Dr. Mixon.
Well, you know, some guys are married to Barbie. Some guys are just dating her. Who knows?
Did you go see Barbie, by the way?
No.
Okay. Okay. How could we help you, Ken?
How could we help you, Ken? Yeah.
My dad was Ken. We won't make fun of you.
Question problem that I had a week or so ago concerning a kidney allopurinol testing results and whether or not I can reestablish the prescriptions that I was already on for a year. I went up and finally saw the doctor. Oh my gosh. I learned back roads to Everett and I am happy. I visited him. He's been taking care of me since my stroke. And the issue is chlorothalidone, allopurinol, and he wants me to get off of chlorothalidone. He has me on allopurinol, 200 milligrams. I'm only taking 100 right now because of after the visit, I want to see how things gel. I was feeling really bad until I got my prescription refilled 3 days before the doctor appointment. I was taking chlorothalidone and allopurinol. I'm feeling good. Went in, talked to him, and he was just, well, I haven't seen you for 4 years, but he's been nice enough to give me these prescriptions. Bottom line is, he has me changing. He wants me off of chlorothalidone, which is 20 milligrams, I think it was. And then the allopurinol is still 200 milligrams. He wants me to go and increase my doxytocin from 2 to 4 milligrams and increase my Lersan from 25 to 50 milligrams a day. Mm-hmm. He says, continue allopurinol. Follow this. Don't eat anything irregular. Stay away from NSAIDs and low sodium diet and avoid dehydration. I'm doing all that.
Good.
I got to tell you, though, I ended endomethacin only because I'm at the end of my prescription allotment or a requested allotment I got a year ago.
Uh-huh.
I took it when I couldn't get to the doctor and I had a gout attack.
Mm.
It was not so much from worry. It was just from sedentary, oh, my gosh, it's winter. And so, yeah, I did.
Okay, sit tight. The music says we got to go to a break, but we'll finish up with you when we get back.
Yeah,
okay?
Ken, stay right there. Leading Edge Medicine will be back in just a moment. Thank you for listening.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again with candy canes and silver lanes aglow.
And we're back with a little Christmas spirit now that we're into December. Loving that voice. Oh, nothing like it.
It is.
Leading Edge Medicine. Hi there and good morning. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat in the studio, talking with Ken right now about what's going on.
All right, Ken.
Yeah, so what happened was the doctor took me off of cloxacillin and indomethacin because I'd finished the
prescription,
right?
Yeah.
And so I got one tablet left. It's what saved me from a severe gout attack on my Achilles tendon. It stopped me from work walking. Last point is he wants me to go on something. Colchicine.
Yeah.
Colchicine. Yeah. Okay.
It's a steroid?
No,
it's not. It's a non-steroidal. Mm-hmm. It does much the same thing as indomethacin, actually, and is very good for gout attacks.
Yes, for acute attacks of gout.
Yeah. It's not to prevent gout attacks. It's if you get an attack.
It works very effectively, better than indomethacin.
Yes.
Wow.
It's a rescue drug.
That.
Yeah, it's a rescue drug that is more effective than indomethacin. So your doc is taking good care of you. He's told you, get off the things that work generally slower and have more adverse effects and use this one that we know that generally works better, it's faster. And, you got your allopurinol, you got your rescue drug, you should do kilpistetic.
Who?
Sorry.
a big doctor word for, I think your doctor's doing a good job with you.
Well, actually, copaesthetic.
Oh, yeah, it's like nephrologist.
Yeah, no. Copaesthetic actually came from my childhood. It was a something that Maynard G. Krebs used to say on Dobie Gillis.
Copaesthetic.
Yeah.
I thought it was thinking Barry Manilow.
And so back in the 1960s, when we were on our surfboards at the beach in the nights, we would, it was cowabunga, dude. That was copaesthetic.
Oh,
yeah.
Copaesthetic. Awesome. Oh, boy.
Oh,
wow. So, Ken, thank you for your
once
call.
In a while, my youth just leaps right out of my mouth.
Oh, it's been leaping a lot today.
The good thing about it is, for some reason, I'm feeling fantastic. I'm
good.
Spinning, doing 360s the way I normally would have prior to my stroke. I'm a run around, get it all done kind of guy, but I used to have a problem with the balance. For some reason, it's gotten a little better.
It's resolving. Good. Well, and practice your balance exercises. You can retrain parts of the brain to regroup some of that balance. So, put one hand on the wall and stand on one leg and then see if you can turn loose of the wall and for how long. Do that for however long you can each day, several times a day with each leg. Rebuild that balance, okay?
Yeah, boy, sure. I'm glad I don't have cancer. I'd pray for that, man.
All right.
All right. Hey, Ken, we got to run.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you for your call.
Merry Christmas, my friend. Bye-bye.
We'll talk with you soon. Okay, we are going to Tacoma. We have Ray on the line. Hi there, Ray. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I'm just calling back from your other program regarding the monoclonal protein. And before we start, I wanted to just tell Dr. Mixon, I bought my cardiologist his book.
Okay.
I did, and he was excited to get it, which surprised me because most of them don't want to even talk about what I'm doing outside of their little lane,
Right. Okay, well, it'll be interesting to see if he becomes a patient.
There you go.
Well, I stuck a card in there for the Tacoma office.
Okay.
Oh, good recruiting there, Ray.
For you,
right.
Ray.
Thank you, yes. All right, well, let's chat a little bit. Monoclonal antibody of the L or lambda type is usually a form of a multiple myeloma, a type of bone marrow cancer. And so, you know, that's why they have, want you off to the hematologist. There are drugs for this that are reasonably effective. So there are some forms of chemotherapy that work well for many people. You know, obviously,
it's not
the drugs,
curable, though, if it is myeloma.
Actually, there are some new therapies, the CRISPR therapies that are being tried for it, that seem to have the potential to actually cure this. However, they are not in widespread use because it runs about $1 million per patient.
That's not my budget.
Yeah. Well, and Medicare kind of has a problem, you know, with $1 million medical bills. Yes. But, you know, if it turns out that it works well, it'll get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper over time as the technology improves and gets more widespread. You know, right now it's a research tool, and it's only done at a very few places in the world, and, you know, it's the high price spread. But there are some medications that are pretty good. Mm-hmm. My stepfather had multiple myeloma.
Okay.
And they actually wiped it out. His monoclonal antibody returned to normal ranges, and mm-hmm. his bones, you know, the x-rays and stuff started looking normal. Mm-hmm. That was the good news. The bad news is the chemotherapy basically wiped out his brain and made him demented as hell.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So he didn't tolerate the chemotherapy, but it cured the multiple myeloma. Hopefully, of course, this was a while back. This was not in recent years.
Right, and the newer drugs are giving them better longevity results.
That's right. So the newer drugs are working better with fewer side effects. Because, you know, this was 30 years ago. This was a while back.
Well, you know, it's my neurologist is the one that ordered the testing. It wasn't anybody else that even suspected anything. And I don't know what she was looking for, and I can't see her till January.
Mm. Yeah. Well, at least she ran a test and got an answer.
Right, right.
And so now we have to get you to the hematologist who can probably get you a cure.
Well, it's kind of scary, and I've got a lot of anxiety because of all my other symptoms. I've got just a multitude of symptoms, and I feel like I'm being treated like a high hypochondriac, but they are real.
Yep.
You know?
I don't doubt that they're real.
Hair loss and all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
And the neurologist wants me to see an autonomic specialist in Kirkland, the only one around. I'm sure you know who he is.
No, I don't, but I haven't had occasion to send someone. But still, an autonomic nervous system guy would, you know, with your widespread symptoms that don't seem to fit a particular pattern, that's probably a great referral.
Well, you know, my blood pressure, you probably don't remember, like at 11:30 in the morning when I saw my endocrinologist, it was 82 over 67.
Yeah, no, I recall we talked about that. Yeah. No,
and when I stand up, it can drop 30 points. You know?
Yep. Yeah, I do agree. I do understand. Well, about all I can tell you
I
at this point.
I don't have much of a life. I mean, no, I can't do anything because, you know, simple things like walking across the parking lot, I feel like I'm taking my life in my hands.
Yeah. Well,
you came into three major bleeds.
Yeah, you came into Tacoma, and, you know, sent the outline of all your problems. So hopefully they'll start doing some of the things we need to get done.
Well, you know, they didn't even know what monoclonal protein was, and neither did my cardiologist, and neither did my endocrinologist.
It's kind of a specialized, I mean, it's one of those things that I remember from way back in medical school. And then I had to refresh myself when my stepfather got the disease. Mm-hmm. And so, otherwise, I might not have known either. But, you know. All right. Well, thank you very much for your call, my dear. But the music says we got to go. But thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Hour number two of Leading Edge Medicine on the way. Stay right there.
Today's Leading Edge Medicine program was previously broadcast. Please do not call the phone numbers.